UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres visits Kyiv.
Grain deal should be prolonged because 18th of March is the date, is the deadline of this current agreement. So this discussion was one of the main priorities and one of the main topics.
Plus, the struggle for Bakhmut rages on.
So Russian forces have likely captured the eastern part of Bakhmut, so anything that is east of Bakhmutka River, following a controlled Ukrainian withdrawal from the area.
And later in the program, we check on war preparations in Lithuania and war manufacturing in Pennsylvania. Today is Wednesday, March 8th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Another VIP visit to Kyiv, this time from UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. Anna Chernikova is there.
Yeah, so Antonio Guterres visited Kyiv once again during this full-scale war, full-scale invasion. And this meeting was definitely, so there were two main topics to discuss, according to President Zelensky and remarks by Antonio Guterres before the meeting. So the main topics were the grain deals, according to what President Zelensky and Antonio Guterres said after their meeting. So the grain deal should be prolonged because 18th of March is the date, is the deadline of this current agreement. So this discussion was one of the main priorities and one of the main topics. And another main topic, according to President Zelensky, was a question of the security. So basically what he said during his speech that he himself and Antonio Guterres discussed the formula of peace, so-called formula of peace. So the plan, peace plan that Kyiv and President Zelensky presented a couple of times already, and the plan that is discussed with the allies.
So two big topics there. First, with the grain deal, is there any indication either from Kyiv or Moscow that the grain deal will not get renewed?
For the moment, we don't hear any negative. We don't hear any negative news on that. Neither we hear anything about, official prolongation. So this particular meeting is one of the main source for us to discuss the prolongation of the grain deal. But Ukrainian position is clear. The deal should be prolonged. President Zelensky put it clear. And because this saves lives of millions of people, this saves people from starving. What is the position of Russian Federation? For the moment, we don't have any official comments on that.
Okay, and switching to their conversation about the peace plan, is this the same peace plan, the same 10-step peace plan that Zelensky was talking about before, or is there something new on the table?
This is the plan that President Zelensky, 10-step plan that President Zelensky has already presented and has already discussed with President Biden and with other allies. And this is something that Ukraine is considering as a kind of a core for the future negotiations. And according to the remarks by Antonio Guterres, he also put it clear that definitely the future peace agreement should be signed according to the UN Charter and according to all the international laws and procedures, because it's no way that future peace would ignore international norms. And this is what Antonio Guterres mentioned.
Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
The owner of Russia's Wagner Group military company says that his troops have extended their gains in Bakhmut in eastern Ukraine as fierce fighting continues in the war's longest battle. AP correspondent Charles Della Desma reports.
Yevgeny Prigozhin says Wagner troops have taken full control of the eastern part of Bakhmut, but neither Russian nor Ukrainian officials have commented so far on the claim. In a blustery video statement recorded near a landmark World War II T-34 tank monument from Bakhmut, the Wagner chief said the capture of the city would allow the Russian military to exploit the success and push deeper into the Donbass to make, he says, the entire world shudder. But Western officials have emphasized even if Ukrainian troops eventually do retreat from Bakhmut, its capture will not have strategic significance or change the course of the conflict. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
We'll visit an ammunition factory in a little bit. Now, as we know, the battle for Bakhmut is and has been one of the toughest battles of the war. Katerina Stepanenko from the Institute for the Study of War gets us up to speed on what's going on there and why it matters.
So Russian forces have likely captured the eastern part of Bakhmut, so anything that is east of Bakhmutka River, following a controlled Ukrainian withdrawal from the area. We have several indicators that that happened. First, we know that Yevgeny Prigozhin today posted a video of himself near a monument in the eastern part of the city, as well as some geolocated footage of Wagner forces walking around freely the eastern part of Bakhmut at the time. Now, Ukrainians are retaining their positions and are defending the Ivanovka line and are exhausting Russian forces that are trying to push through. And that is essentially what we're seeing. There's not much of an advance that I saw this morning, and it looks like most of the advance that we have been practicing for the past couple of days happened on the eastern side of Bakhmut because Ukrainians have conducted controlled withdrawal from the area.
So now the question is, why? Why is this city so important to both sides?
So Bakhmut holds a symbolic significance to Russians. They've been fighting for the area since at least May, with the battles intensifying in August. So you can imagine that is what, 8-9 months worth of combat full of devastating losses, different troops that were committed to this line. Russians right now might have an idea that they will likely take this city and try to push for further Ukrainian strongholds, potentially Konstantinivka or Slavyansk or Kramatorsk. But Bakhmut is not operationally significant or strategically significant for such an advance. Bakhmut is necessary but not sufficient for Russian forces and Russian advances in Donetsk Oblast. And Russian forces have taken heavy losses fighting for this settlement. Essentially, what we're observing is that the Russian attack after Bakhmut has a high probability of culminating, given the terrain that is past Bakhmut, as well as the losses that Russians have sustained already in the fight for it.
So what it sounds like is the Russians are fighting for Bakhmut for a symbolic victory, and the Ukrainians are fighting there so that they can continue to inflict damages and casualties upon the Russians to keep them from going other places.
Yes, precisely.
God, that's an awful thing to be happening, isn't it?
It really is. However, you know, there's a way that Ukraine has different strategies that it can enforce in the current situation. So the battle is not resolved. It's not clear that Russians will be able to envelop the city. Russian military correspondents and bloggers are also saying that the battle is the Russians haven't won the battle. And they're not close to winning the battle just yet. And they're worried about Ukrainian counteroffensive. They're worried about Ukrainian ability to hold positions in western Bakhmut and worried about Russia's ability to continue fighting for the Donetsk administrative borders after the Battle of Bakhmut.
Katerina Stepanenko from the Institute for the Study of War. Katerina, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Ukraine's chief prosecutor has tentatively identified a man, apparently shot and killed by Russian speakers, in a video circulated widely on social media as a missing Ukrainian soldier. AP correspondent Ben Thomas has that story.
The grim 12-second video shows a man in Ukrainian army fatigues, apparently unarmed, standing in the woods in what appears to be a freshly dug hole, smoking a cigarette. Someone off camera can be heard saying in Russian, "Film him." Lifting his chin, he says, "Glory to Ukraine." Just before the gunshots. In his nightly address Monday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky called on his nation to respond to those words in unity, saying, "Glory to the hero." Glory to Ukraine. And he vowed, "We will find the killers." Tuesday, Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba said the incident explains what he calls a genocidal war.
"The Ukrainian man was clearly murdered simply for expressing his Ukrainian identity and love for his homeland."
I'm Ben Thomas.
Russia's invasion of Ukraine has made others in the region nervous. We'll see what's going on in Lithuania to prepare for a potential war in a few minutes. But first, Wednesday, March 8th is International Women's Day, a day across the world to honor the social, economic, cultural, and political achievements of women. And the leaders of Ukraine and Russia did just that. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky gave remarks in a video address expressing his appreciation of the Ukrainian women with words of gratitude to his mother, wife, and female colleagues. He went on to thank all Ukrainian women for their service.
"I believe it is important today to thank women who work, teach, study, save, treat, fight for Ukraine, to remember, and thank all women who gave their lives for the country.
Meanwhile, Russian President Vladimir Putin presented state awards to women, paying special attention to those women serving in Ukraine in what Moscow is calling a special military operation.
"Dear friends, in times of trials and hardships, people always show their best qualities. They are determined by the nature of our people. Now, when Russia has again encountered direct threats to its security and sovereignty, we see many examples of bravery and determination, courage, a willingness to defend the truth, protect people, and the very future of the state itself, the future that we ourselves need. In this hall are women who perform military, official, professional duties with honor."
В этом зале женщины с честью выполняющие воинский, служебный, профессиональный долг.
The first International Women's Day was in 1911, when more than 1 million women and men around the world attended rallies campaigning for women's right to work, to vote, to be trained, to hold public office, and to end discrimination. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. Russia's assault on Ukraine, now in its second year, has set off alarms in many neighboring countries. Lithuania is redoubling its efforts to prepare for a confrontation that may now seem more possible than ever. John Speer narrates this report by Ricardo Marquina in the Lithuanian capital, Vilnius.
Lithuanian infantry advances. The objective is to quickly take an enemy position. These are just exercises, a rehearsal for what may be a real war, because it's clear to these fighters and to many Lithuanians that the world has changed in a year. Routine training now means much more for these men and women. As they see it, Lithuania's very existence depends on it.
"I feel that in my soldiers, I feel in myself that motivation is even bigger and our mentality grows bigger because the neighbor is nearby. And what we do really big work into our individual skills. For example, surviving as individual. And of course, we are always aware and always prepared."
Lithuania is a member of the European Union and of NATO, which provides a political and military shield that Ukraine did not have when it was attacked a year ago. Yet, the war has shown that much remains to be learned. The NATO forces deployed in Lithuania consider it vital to observe the Ukrainian troops and integrate the tactics with which they have managed to face the Russian invasion. Our NATO hosts ask us to use first names.
"When I look at our simple tactical level, is what you see, what you can do with not that many personnel, but with a lot of perseverance. But also combining it with modern drones, modern technologies, to set up the preconditions for a good fight. I think that's one of the things that mainly stands out for how they put up a really brave fight now in the Ukraine.
Increased tensions in Europe brought on by the war in Ukraine have driven Russian chauvinism. In the Duma, Russia's parliament, a proposal has been introduced to reverse the 1991 decision to grant the independence to Lithuania. Moscow made a similar move in the run-up to its full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Russia's assault on Ukraine has not only forced the Lithuanian authorities and NATO to react, but society in general. The Lithuanian Riflemen's Union is a group of male and female volunteers who undergo military training on weekends. Many of them say February the 24th, 2022, was a turning point for them.
That day, there was many discussions with friends, with family. What would you do if something like that happened in your country? Because that is very realistic. And I felt like the answers of running away or hiding wasn't for me.
Lithuania, with fewer than 2 million people and armed forces of just over 20,000 troops, is worried about Russia's refusal to back down, despite the weaker-than-expected performance of its forces in Ukraine. Lithuania's border with Belarus, a Russian ally, is also cause for concern.
We must look at our own security, at our own borders. We have Kaliningrad in the west, and we have Belarus, which is hosting huge contingent of Russian forces and is supporting Russian aggression towards Ukraine.
With NATO forces on Lithuanian soil, the confrontation between Russia and the West has one of its lines of contact in Lithuania, a scenario almost identical to that of the Cold War, a scenario full of tension and uncertainty over what many see as a possible conflict for which this small Baltic country strives to be prepared. For Ricardo Marquina in Vilnius, John Speer, VOA News.
The war in Ukraine has had far-reaching effects even thousands of kilometers away from the battlefield. We check in on the small West African country of Ghana in a few minutes. But before we get to find out what's happening there, we go to Scranton in northeastern Pennsylvania. The U.S. has already sent more than 1 million shells to Ukraine. Maria Ulvanoska visited the Scranton Army Ammunition Plant, where those shells are made.
U.S. efforts to arm the country start here in Scranton, Pennsylvania, at the Scranton Army Ammunition Plant. It produces 155mm steel shells, crucial to Ukraine's efforts to defend itself against the Russian invasion.
The projectiles that we make here, 155mm M795 high explosive rounds, it's a 500,000 square foot production facility, and we use the large majority of it for the production of the 795. And so everybody that's working here today is working in support of producing that round.
Steel arrives here in 6-meter long bars. In the forge, they are cut into 3 pieces and placed into furnaces, where they transform into meter-long billets, smaller bars. The vast majority of work in the factory is done by people, but in this shop, the process is handled by robots.
That robot is recent technology. It's several years old, but certainly it's computer-controlled, so it's very recent technology. And, in an environment like that, you want to remove human interaction. You can't have humans working in that environment all day long.
From here, the unfinished pieces are transported on the conveyor to another shop, where they will cool down for 4 hours. Hansen warns, if one were to accidentally touch the hot steel, their hand would get burnt to the bone. Next, special equipment transforms the blanks into polished shells with tapered noses. Each projectile is carefully inspected by a factory employer to ensure that they meet technical requirements.
Quality is the number one aspect, and every part needs to meet the technical data package. It needs to meet very strict quality standards, and we're working in thousands of an inch. So we need to be sure that we're right. So that's why they're inspected so often.
In this workshop, the steel tubes are transformed into what looks like ammunition, but they are hollow inside and will be sent to another plant in Iowa to be filled with explosives. This plant has been manufacturing artillery shells since the 1950s. But the last time the factory supplied ammunition so intensively was during the Korean War. Artillery played a less crucial role in more recent wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, but the battles taking place in Ukraine today have revived the demand. According to the NATO estimates, Ukraine is firing from 6 to 7,000 artillery rounds per day. This factory alone produces 11,000 shells every month, working at its maximum capacity. The Scranton Army Ammunition Plant is one of the five enterprises supplying ammunition for the US and allied needs. Today, the facility is being modernized to meet the needs, including of Ukraine's army. Maria Ulyanovska, Konstantin Golubchik for VOA News, Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Russia's invasion of Ukraine last year saw a dramatic rise in the price of fertilizer for importers like Ghana, where farmers are struggling to cope. Ghana's economic problems have made imports even more expensive, forcing farmers to switch to different crops and ultimately reduce production. Kent Mensah reports from Akatsi, Ghana.
Ghanaian farmers were hit hard by the jump in fertilizer prices after the invasion of Ukraine a year ago by Russia, one of the world's and Ghana's top suppliers. Western-led sanctions pushed companies not to trade with Russia, which industry experts say forced a 60% decline in Ghana's fertilizer import and caused prices to skyrocket. Farmers were forced to shift to crops that require fewer inputs, says Felix Kamasa, who also reduced his farmland by nearly a third.
We have to look at other alternatives to make sure that we are in business, because commercial farmers, when you want to rely on fertilizer importation for now, you can't make any good profit out of it because it's a big challenge.
Fertilizer prices have stabilized since last year's spike, but are still roughly double what they were a year before the invasion, too expensive for most Ghanaian farmers. Ghana's economic problems have made imports even more pricey, as the currency, the cedi, dropped in value last year by more than half. Nana Aisha Mohamed is country manager for the African Fertilizer and Agribusiness Partnership, AFAP.
The dynamics of the fertilizer crisis in Ghana have slightly changed. We no longer, if globally, the prices are stabilizing. However, it will take about 6 months for retail prices to catch up. And this is largely due to logistics and supply chain issues. We also, as a country, are facing some economic challenges, which means that our currency is not very stable and is performing very poorly against the trading currency, which is the dollar.
Mohamed says food exports from Ghana, the world's second largest cocoa exporter, have also been affected. But Ghana Cocoa Board spokesman Fifi Boafo says a quick switch to organic chicken manure has helped farmers bridge the gap.
Of quality, it is even better for us to rely on the poultry manure than the inorganic fertilizers we import, because that is natural. Apart from the fact that it is natural, it has shown that it rather builds a soil structure better than the inorganic fertilizers we import. The only challenge, however, is that coming by it is a bit more difficult compared to assessing the inorganic from the market.
Ghana last April announced plans to build a $2 billion fertilizer plant for local production, but that would take about 4 years. Meanwhile, farmers like Kamasa are left reaping what they can as economic casualties in a war sown by Russia. Kent Mensah for VOA News, Akachi, Ghana.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media, follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.